Appraisals are up to their old shenanigans. We're going to talk about that right now.
You're about to hear the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
What do you seem to understand? I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name is Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California, member of the National Association of Realtors. But please, don't hold that against me. I hope you all had a great weekend. Had a weird technical problem on Friday. Finished the show, did it, and when it was all said and done, there was something wrong with the original file. It got all corrupted. So unfortunately, there was no show posted on Friday. I'm still working on why that happened. I changed how this piece of software I'm using does stuff, so hopefully that won't happen again. It's never happened before, so I'm not real sure what was up, but the file I ended up with wouldn't successfully upload, and the original file on my computer is also screwed up. So every once in a while, the technology is going to bite you, I guess. I thought it might be appropriate to do a quick check-in on how the new way of doing the show is going. I'm going to continue on this way. I think I'll be doing it 5 days a week and then taking Saturdays and Sundays off. What's interesting is that my daily listens are up. So, and I'm assuming the stats here on Blog Talk Radio are correct. Some very interesting things happening with Blog Talk Radio. Through their system, I canceled my membership, and it's a yearly thing, so it's still in effect until the 1st of October. Within 24 hours of doing that, none of my shows were showing up on the front page of the real estate section. And for those of you, I don't know how many of you consume the show through Blog Talk Radio. I know there's not many of you, but I know when I go to Blog Talk Radio to upload the show, or when I used to do them live, I would go and just see where I was placing, it must be a year and a half, 2 years, I was pretty regularly the number one show. The lowest I've ever been is the number three show, and suddenly I am not there at all. So this is the very first time in, I think, the entire time that my show's been on Blog Talk Radio that it is not showing up on the front page of Popular in Real Estate. So take that for what it's worth. I don't know if that's a cause and effect. If it's not a cause and effect, it is the biggest coincidence to ever be a coincidence. I don't know if maybe it's not so much that I – because other things changed, right? I'm not doing it live. So maybe they separate out folks live versus folks uploading. I don't know. I want to try and give them the benefit of the doubt, but it definitely feels like if you don't want to spend money with us anymore kind of thing, then we're not going to put you in the proper ranking on the front page anymore. So anyway, the data has been very interesting. I'm getting more listens per day, but each individual show is getting a little bit less than a third of the listens that it used to get. And again, I'm not 100% sure I'm buying the Blog Talk Radio numbers, because as I think I've mentioned, I don't actually use the Blog Talk Radio RSS feed for the show. I have it feed into another thing that I use, which then points to things like iTunes and everything else. And that thing is telling me different data than Blog Talk Radio is. So I am very much on the fence on how to proceed based on the numbers I'm seeing for the show. So if I can just get the general trend, assume that's accurate, then great. On a day-to-day basis, listens have increased. They're doing their usual weekly fluctuation. It's, you know, people tend to not listen to these things on Saturdays and Sundays. So, you know, I'm just kind of calibrating here, but it's been actually steadily increasing since the week of July 4th, but I didn't change anything till the week of July 20th. So we've only been doing this a week or more, a little bit more. So, all right. Sorry. I don't mean to bore you with that stuff. It's something that I find interesting. I'm definitely trying to broaden the appeal of the show. And I'm just not real sure what gets to you better. Is a slightly longer format where more people listen to that one show the way to go? Or is this just an example of folks picking and choosing what show they want to listen to based on the topic? And so they skip a topic they're not horribly interested in. And then how do I feel about that? Am I cool with that? I guess I am. We'll figure it out moving forward. We're going to be revisiting an interesting topic today that we've talked about on the show in the past, and that is appraisals. There's a variety of ways to look at appraisals. Typically, appraisals have not been a problem recently, but with the dramatic increase in sales prices, I think it was inevitable that you might start to see a discrepancy between what gets offered on a property and then what the home actually appraises for. Now, to sort of just do a big rewind for a second, one of the many scapegoats that were being pointed at in terms of the downturn in the real estate market, in terms of the bursting of that bubble, was to blame appraisers. And they did this by saying appraisers simply came along and just appraised stuff for an inflated amount. And I actually don't think that's fair. There may have been instances, very limited instances, and I want to be really clear. I think if there were any, they were so statistically insignificant that they did not contribute to the horrible subprime lending problem. That's why we call it the subprime lending crash and not the appraisal crash. It wasn't based on appraisals. It's just yet another one of those things that the folks who did cause this mess wanted to point to as a problem. So as a reaction to that, a lot of stupid laws got passed. And for one thing, banks could not directly contact appraisers. There now had to be a middleman, so that increased the cost of appraisers. And we suddenly saw this bizarre set of things happen with appraisers. And I don't know what this has to do with it, but suddenly all the appraisers I were getting were from four counties away, so they didn't know the area, and they were all Russian, or at least had Russian accents. And that lasted for about 8 months. That was a couple of years ago. Very bizarre. No idea why that was happening, but it suddenly stopped. And things got, I'm not sure how the system shifted, but suddenly we started getting folks who actually lived in the areas where the properties were located. So they focused on those areas. And the other side of this is that the folks in the appraisal business got so beaten over the head that their reaction was to really go conservative. So they were always going to err on the side of a lower number. And that was a problem. Now, the very first time this happened to me, it worked out great because I was representing the buyer. No one was really talking about this as an issue. So I used it as an opportunity to negotiate down the sales price, which they did. So that was great. Worked out great for my clients. And we'll move forward with that, kind of keeping that in the back of our head. But let's talk a little bit about what the current state of affairs is with appraisals. Now, there's an article up on housingwire.com titled "The Wrap: Appraisals Down Alongside Mortgage Applications." What's interesting is that in this case, we're not just talking about a reduction in the number of appraisals. And this is another way to sort of measure what's going on with the market, just to give you sort of a broad view here. This is a thing that HousingWire is doing. They're partnering with AllaMode, and that's an appraisal form software company, which has since 2006, tracked the appraisal volume throughout the country to provide a weekly read on appraisal volume. It's interesting because appraisals don't just happen when you sell your house. Let me give you an example of that. So let's say a bank holds a whole bunch of foreclosed properties. Now, for those of you who've been listening for a really long time, you know that for about 18 months there, I had a really good friend who's an appraiser who kept appraising the same properties about every 6 months. These were all bank-owned properties. They were vacant. They were foreclosed. That's bank-owned. If your home gets foreclosed, it becomes bank-owned. And nobody was putting these things on the market. They were just kind of holding on to them. And at that time, we theorized that the banks were waiting for a more stable marketplace. They didn't want to oversell and force prices down further. They wanted to try to recoup more money. So they did that, despite the fact that the system is actually geared towards them not wanting to do that. The way the banking system is set up is banks are supposed to want to get rid of bank-owned properties. Banks cannot count those homes as assets. They are unproductive debt, right, that they were unable to collect. So it actually is supposed to negatively affect their rating, which is supposed to negatively affect the rate they get when they get money from the Fed, right, from the Treasury. Well, none of that happened. All of those interesting things that are supposed to happen accounting-wise to banks when they're holding foreclosed properties, everyone just sort of winked and nudged and moved on and didn't ding all of these banks, which would have been a hard thing for the government to do, since with one hand they're telling them that, you know, the way the system is geared is you're not supposed to want to hold on to these properties, but with the other hand, they're giving them hundreds and millions of dollars, trillions of dollars all told, but each of them obviously isn't getting that kind of levels of money, but millions, in some cases, some banks, it wouldn't surprise me, got close to $1 billion to bail them out. So it would be kind of goofy to then also say that you now can't borrow money as on great terms because you're holding all these properties. We can have a discussion maybe someday about how that was just another of a long series of bad ideas. We should have let the system work the way the system is supposed to work. But that's, again, tall grass that we don't need to get into right now. So it was interesting because these kinds of numbers that we'll be getting from these guys will reflect that as well. It won't just be homes that are selling and getting appraised. At least that's the impression I get after reading this. And that's kind of interesting. It'll be interesting to see how many folks are polling or going to the trouble of paying to have someone go out and determine what the market value of a piece of property is. This thing goes on to say that this a la mode effort captures 50% of the appraiser market, more than 6 million appraisals per year since 2007, making it the most comprehensive record of national appraisal. Now, the latest figures are interesting. It's the vast majority of the appraisals are up, and I don't mean the number of appraisals. I think that is the number of appraisals. Yeah, I'm sorry. This particular table is the number of appraisals. The interesting number is the appraiser home value opinions fell further below homeowners' estimates in June, making the fifth consecutive month of this trend at the national level, according to Quicken Loans. So let's translate that into English. People who own a house who are trying to sell it, who've arrived at what they think is a reasonable selling price, are asking for prices that are higher than what the home ultimately appraised for. All right? Now, one big problem back when folks were trying to get out from loans, they were maybe trying to do a short sale, those kinds of things. What they were frequently finding was is that the amount of money that was being negotiated for these homes wasn't even high enough to cover the appraisal. So let's say somebody owes $300,000 on a house. They're trying to sell it for $299,000 or sell it for exactly $300,000 so they can at least come out even, but then they can't. So we abandon that, and that's when the short sale process starts, right? So let's say they discover that they have hopes of selling it for $280,000. That's a short sale. It's $20,000 below what they owe, but then it appraises, say, for $270,000. Now, that wasn't a horribly unusual occurrence back in the day, and there are really very few options in that case. We'll talk about it here in a second after we've covered sort of the state of affairs as it is now. Now, appraiser opinions of home values were 1.4% lower than homeowner estimates, according to Quicken Loans' monthly National Home Price Perception Index. Quicken Loans National Home Value Index, or HVI, reported a slight increase of 0.74 in June, with home values increasing in all regions of the country except for the South, which posted a decline of 0.09. National home values are up 4.38 from the year prior. Now, there's a, what's really funny is there's, I found a variety of articles sort of on this general idea, the perception that folks have of their property's value versus what appraisers are saying. There was another article about prices being up in the Southland or how inventory was super low and it was this crazy seller's market. And what's really funny is anecdotally in all of these articles, the realtor they're talking to or the industry professional in whatever industry gets asked the question, do they think the market is going to turn go down again? And all of them are saying no. You know, I didn't save the one. The one from Los Angeles, the one from Southern California was probably the most annoying because it was all sunshine and lollipops. It was roses and unicorns and nothing but sunshine as far as the eye could. It was a Coke and a smile for the world, which was a little bit creepy because there's, as we've talked about here, there are plenty of things to be worried about. And in the mainstream stuff, in the general consumption stuff, you're just not hearing even a critical assumption or a critical analysis of anything. And what scares me about stuff like that is just before things are about to go really bad, it seems like that's what you get. You get these people sort of dancing around and saying, wow, you know, everything's great. Think back to what was going on, even if you want to just talk about the politicians involved, right? Who was that idiot? God, we mocked him repeatedly on this show. But there were several members of Congress who were on housing committees and all these things. And literally just before days before things went – and even days after things had gone horribly, horribly wrong, there is no housing crisis. There is no challenge to the lending world. Everything was fine according to these folks. And so many people in the media were willing to echo the same thing. So I guess the point I'm getting at is I think it's natural for appraisals to be below list price or below offer price on many homes that are selling right now. And the reason is because I think we've had this – it's just difficult for appraisers to validate a offer price that has – where the price has risen so quickly. So the question isn't whether or not appraisers are doing their job right or whether they're causing or preventing a problem. The bottom line is an appraiser goes out, finds the property they're supposed to appraise, looks at activity over the last 3 months and tries to find as focused a comparable property as possible. Typically there's four involved. And a minimum of four. And if they can't find some right there on the same street, then they go a couple of more streets out. And if they can't find another one, they go a couple of more streets out. And the wider that circle gets, the less confidence they have in the value they come up with. But what we're seeing here is that the appraisers are gun shy because they already got slapped around the last time to the point where some of them are now being sued. So let's go ahead and take a couple of notes from a site called Appraisers Blogs. Quote, do you buy into the hype or do you actually do local comparable property market research to verify trends? I just completed an appraisal on a property I appraised 2 years ago. I did a 5-year market study on comparables then and found the market for that type of property had been declining at that time. I did another 5-year market study on this same property this time around, and guess what? The property values for this type of property are still declining. For this particular property, the land held the highest component of overall value. In fact, the land value is 95% of the overall value. The lender actually called me today and understands from reading the report why my opinion of market value is significantly lower than the contract sales price. It's paramount that we appraisers take the time to actually do proper market studies based around characteristics of the appraised property and not just accept what others say about all properties in an area. It means you cannot assume what transpires for all actually relates to the appraised property. The two may not correlate and in fact may be quite different. This is one jaundiced issue I have with some regression programs being touted as the be-all, end-all answer to appraisal adjustments. So And that's one thing that this guy is doing, and this is a more in-depth thing that happens when they start doing these five-year market studies. But what's interesting is that in the near term, it's difficult because there's no history of properties that sold at these higher rates. And we're seeing properties increase in some cases in such dramatic fashion in such a short period of time that finding those comparables is difficult because they aren't there, right? First of all, inventory is super, super low. So the number of homes that are selling is already kind of low. In Morgan Hill, it's very difficult. It has been for the last year. I mean, I typically try to look at it through an appraiser's eye when I'm making an offer on a house because I want to warn my buyers about the eventuality. And yes, for those buyers out there, we're actually going to have a conversation about what you need to do in that situation. But this goes on with some other interesting stuff. So again – Lano Financial Group, who is Carrington Capital Management, and why are they suing so many appraisers? This again was happening over to Appraiser Law Blog. That's a different blog, Appraiser Law Blogs. There is now a second round of cases being filed by different investors. This round is being led by Lano Financial Group LLC, which also acquired the rights to sue appraisers from the same sources. Like the other entities filing lawsuits, this is an investment entity, not a real lender. Though its name might have been chosen to sound like a lender, it acquires the purported rights to sue appraisers from lenders or mortgage investors in connection with loans that long ago went into default and were foreclosed. Lano did file 9 cases in the failed first round, mistakenly using the wrong name Lano Funding, and 7 of those cases have been dismissed against it to this date. In most or all the cases filed by Lano in the second round, the original loans were funded or purchased by Impact Funding, which then purportedly assigned the rights to sue appraisers to Savant LG, who then purported to assign the rights to Lano. It's L-L-A-N-O. An example assignment is included here. In the assignment, Impact states that it does hereby assign any and all of its rights to pursue any and all claims against the real estate appraisers and or the appraisal company. Another entity recently filing such lawsuits against appraisers in Carrington Capital Management, which is apparently under the same umbrella of ownership as Carrington Mortgage, which the lawsuits being filed now relate to old appraisals. I do think appraisers and appraisal firms, AMCs, need to consider the liability risk these particular clients pose to them with regard to current and future appraisal work. If appraisers are working for them now, these clients have a far greater propensity to sue appraisers and firms than others when a loan goes bad. I realize I read a lot there, but the sweet spot there was current and future appraisal work. So this is a situation where these folks are likely to get sued either way. If they don't appraise the house at the purchase price, what happens? The buyer or the seller might then want to sue, right? If for some reason that kills the deal, they might want to try to sue. For those who get the appraisal, so here's the catch 22. If it does appraise and then the market takes a dump again, market values go down. Well, that leaves the appraisers again open to being sued by the buyer for having appraised it at that level, right? So it's really a no-win situation for appraisers. I feel sorry for appraisers. And I got to tell you, appraisers have to be the most – it's got to stink to be an appraiser and have to deal with real estate agents. It stinks as a broker to deal with real estate agents. Granted, I am an oddball. I don't like agents in general. So that's a problem to begin with. But appraisers have something that the real estate agent wants. Now, do I try to influence appraisers? Absolutely. But I have boundaries. I give them the same market information I gave my seller when we determined list price. I come in with and because I'm going to assume they haven't been inside of every single property that is comparable to my property. And this is – we're into the advice stage here, folks. This is the kind of prep work that if you're a seller in today's marketplace with values increasing in your area rather dramatically, these are things that you need your real estate agent to be doing. If your agent is not there when the appraisal guy comes to appraise your property, I don't care if the buyer's agent is there. The buyer's agent isn't the one you want there. The seller's agent needs to be there. They need to share with the appraiser all the data that they use to come to the listing price. And if this is an offer over listing price, hopefully you're going to have some data to back that up and indicate that that's still a good price. If you and your realtor, and this is one reason why I think that for stuff like this, it's often good to have a local real estate person list your house. For instance, in Morgan Hill, I have probably whenever a property comes on the market, I like to go see it. So I may miss a handful, but way more. I probably get into 80 or 90% of all the homes that list in Morgan Hill. I'd say it's even higher than that, but I've never really done the numbers, so I don't want to. I'd rather underpromise and overdeliver, but let's ballpark it at 90%. I'm super comfortable with that. At least for single family residential homes, I'm probably far less than that when it comes to condos and townhomes, and I don't go into mobile homes at all. So that's the spread. That's the lay of the land. That's information that appraiser does not have. Perfect example, right? And this was a tough one because this is a $1.3 million house I sold a couple of years ago when things were not appraising, particularly at that price point. Anything above about $1.1 million wasn't appraising. In fact, that's the same year where I sold two at above that price point. And I literally, when folks made offers, told them this house will not appraise. Why? Because there are no comparables. You'd have to go back years to even find a single property that's like this one that has sold. So what that appraiser is going to have to do is widen their circle so much that they're suddenly including far less desirable communities. And this was in San Martín, so they were suddenly going to be including Gilroy. And I hate to say it, Gilroy folks, there are parts of Gilroy I like, parts of Gilroy's I don't like so much. But there's absolutely a stigma with Gilroy. People absolutely expect to pay a good chunk less once you live in the city of Gilroy. And that's just a fact. I'm sorry. But I have this conversation sometimes with folks in Gilroy who want me to list their house, and they'll point to properties in Morgan Hill or San Martín as comparable and say their home should sell for as much as that house. And I have to try to explain that that's just not the case. The same house in Gilroy is going to sell for quite a bit less than it did in Morgan Hill, which explains why homes can stay on the market for months in Gilroy and the exact same house built by the exact same company in Morgan Hill will sell in days. So, and maybe that's a topic for a whole other show. But in any event, this is the beginning. This is laying the groundwork. So when the appraiser guy comes, the seller's agent should be there. You should give them insights into all the comparable properties, particularly the ones that you were inside of. And as I said, as a perfect example from the past, there was a comparable property that was at the time it sold in absolutely crappy shape. Absolutely crappy shape. But if you drive by and look at it now, and it had only sold a month earlier, but the person who bought it 2 weeks into it, they had completely redone the outside. They tore everything up. They put in a whole new driveway, landscaped it, and painted it and did all this outside fascia work. So by the time the appraiser came to do a drive-by on that property, it looked amazing. And I had to point out to him that that's not what it looked like when it sold. You know, he could see the photos, I guess, in the MLS, but I don't think that was enough. When he saw it, he was stunned. So I made sure to tell him that that was all work that was done. Now, if I had not done that, there's no question in my mind that that appraisal would have come in substantially lower. And I was able to validate up to relatively close to sales price, still didn't get right on it, but I'm sure that I got it as close as it possibly could get. Your agent needs to be able to do the same thing for you as a seller. Now, there's two sides to this, of course. There's the buyer side and the seller side. The seller needs to make sure that their agent is making it as easy as possible for the appraiser to come in at the sales price. Now, what does that not include? So here's my take. I walk them through the property. I answer their questions. I give them a list of comparable properties, ones I use to come up with the list price and to inform the selection of the value of the property. And I include my notes for each property that I was inside of. If I was in it, I give them notes. Because a lot of times you can see a photo of a kitchen and you think that looks fantastic, but you get in there and discover it is crappy. That happens a lot. So by being able to give the appraiser that information, you're giving them data they don't have, but that can absolutely inform their decision on what that property is going to be worth. And this is also a moment, I think, for other realtors to listen, because by and large, you are all screwing this up. I have heard agents say the weirdest crap to appraisers. This is not the person that you need to cajole, poke, yell at, scream at, or say you're going to sue. I have heard all of that come out of the mouths of real estate agents, and it's idiotic. In my case, I go out, I meet them, I find out where they're from. I just ask them, hey, how you doing? You know, I haven't actually met you before. Is this your area? You know, I want to find out a little bit more about this person's experience. I want to ascertain if it makes sense that they're appraising this house. Why am I doing that? Because if this appraisal comes in ridiculously low, I want to have good ammunition to get a reappraisal done. I've never had to do it. I know some agents who have had to do it, and I thought, and in most of those cases, I thought they were actually pretty justified. But this is all up front. If your agent doesn't do this, if your agent doesn't show up for that appraisal, none of this can happen. None of these questions can get asked. Someone's just going to come and show up and do their thing, and you're going to not going to have any data. So if that appraisal comes in low, if that appraisal is an absolute shock, what are you going to do about it? Well, your agent is the one who's supposed to facilitate that. That's one way they earn that money that they get in their commission. So make sure they're doing it. Make sure that they're showing up for that. Now, on the seller's or the buyer's side, for the appraisal, the bank will say we're going to order the appraisal. They'll tell you when it's going to happen. Let me suggest, you know, I'm of a mixed mind on this one. There have been times when I thought it was okay for my buyer clients to be there during the appraisal. There's other times when I don't. If as a buyer, you're very comfortable with your agent, because again, as a buyer's agent, I always go to the appraisals. So if this system's working right, the buyer and seller agents are at the appraisal. I'll be honest with you. 90% of the time, I'm there alone, regardless of which side I'm representing. And that blows my mind, particularly when I'm representing buyers. It blows my mind that every time I tell the selling agent I will be there with the appraiser, or when they assume that I'm the only one who should be there, right? A lot of this weird realtor interaction stuff is sort of cubbyholing who owns what. Well, you know what? Once an agreement has been entered into, we all own all of it. So we all need to do our best to make sure each part of that gets done as good as possible. And I'll tell you what, in the last year, last 2 years, I can say that for every appraisal I went to, I was the only agent there for both my buyer and seller side jobs. And that is not the way we do this without problems. In order to prevent problems, you need to be there to work on them, or at least set the stage to deal with them. All right. So, And this is going to become a bigger and bigger deal with the way the market numbers are going in terms of prices. It's also going to be a big deal as we get interest rates changing. And I'm not sure where this is all going to go. I'm still on the fence. I'm still hearing a lot of people telling me interest rates are going to go up in September. I really don't know. I still think they're not going to do it. And if they do, it'll be ridiculously small. But that will also have an effect on this because it affects the way you buy, right? You're suddenly buying in a different bracket, and homes in different brackets tend to appraise differently. So, you know, and it the lower the price, the less of a problem you tend to have with an appraisal. And then again, as more data accumulates over the course of months to substantiate a claim of value through a purchase price, this problem will tend to fix itself. But so the seller can help deal with this early, before the paperwork ever gets written. And that's the way I prefer to do it. I like to solve problems before they become problems. I consider that part of my job. Let's say we get there. Let's say we get to the point where the appraisal happens, and for whatever reason, the appraisal comes in, you offer $250 and the appraiser comes in at $210. What do you do now? Well, the reality is that the bank is only going to loan whatever the percentage agreement. So if you're getting an 80% loan, or you're getting a 90% loan, or maybe it's a 3%, maybe you're only putting 3% down, so it's a 97% loan. They're only going to loan based on that appraised value. They're not going to loan based on what you agreed to pay for the property. So now you have a problem. suddenly, in order for you to make this deal happen, you have to come up with an extra $40,000. Now, I've talked in prep because I've been in this situation before. I've talked to lenders before to figure out other ways to do it. Typically, because I've had some people say, well, why don't you just get another loan? Why don't you get a second loan of some kind to make up that difference? Well, typically that's a more difficult loan. Typically it's a higher interest rate loan, and the indebtedness it incurs will often offset the scales so that you now no longer will qualify for the first loan. Is it an option to explore? Absolutely, if you believe it's worth it. If this is the home you want and you want to stay in it and you have a plan to get rid of that second loan as early as possible, fantastic, if you can find someone to do that. But let me just tell you, this is not going to be a lending situation that's likely to get solved with your mainstream lenders. This isn't going to be a Chase or a Bank of America or a Wells Fargo situation. You're going to have to go for either loan. You're going to have to go with someone who's far more creative. You're probably going to have to talk to someone like I turned folks on to Tracy, who's great. She's a loan broker who also works with a firm that does direct lending. Even she may have trouble making this one happen, but I would absolutely give her the benefit of the doubt if she was to tell me she might be able to put something together. Typically, if she tells me that, it's going to happen. The other alternative is for you to simply come up with more money, and I realize that's not a realistic option for a lot of folks. And then the third option is to request a reappraisal. If you are absolutely sure that the amount of money you're offering on this house is reasonable, it is market – It's the fair market value of the home, and you're comfortable with that, it's not going to cost you anything to fight for that. Except for time. It's going to cost you time, and it's going to cost you a little sanity, but that's really going to be your only other option. Let me suggest that I'll be honest. I can't remember a time when a client has asked for a reappraisal that actually happened where the number came in enough different to make a difference. So I'm always someone who believes in exhausting all your options if you're absolutely dedicated to trying to work through what you're doing. But I have to say that you're operating in a very narrow window of possibility. So take that for what it's worth. It may just be where you have to say, all right, it's just not going to happen. But here's the other thing. Here's the last option. See if you can get the seller to take the appraised value or as close to the appraised value as you can manage to pay. Another option is to ask the seller to take back a note on that last chunk. That may not fly with the first lender either, which may mean you have to get a new first lender, because I'm sure you can find a first lender who's going to be comfortable with the seller taking back a second. It's going to depend on the terms of that second. You might even want to get into a creative discussion with your first, depending on who the first is. A Chase or a Wells Fargo isn't likely to have a lot of wiggle room, but if you're dealing with a smaller direct lender, then you may be able to work out a plan where you say to them, how would this second that the seller is going to carry back, how would that have to be written for you to be comfortable with it, right? And see if that works. So exhaust all your options. Everybody's a stakeholder in this. It really just comes down to how far you're willing to go. And if some of these obstacles are too high, then just move on. You know, cut your losses, move on, try to find another house. And I realize that for a lot of you in a lot of different markets, that's not an easy proposition because there's just not much inventory out there. But on the flip side, is it worth it for you to burn an awful lot of time? Because this would be a time-consuming process, potentially completely blowing everything out of the water in terms of wasting your time on this property. I think what I would probably be doing at the same time while you're trying to remedy this is continue to shop for properties. And if you find a home that you like as much or more during this process, at least you haven't stopped shopping. You can back out of this and say, well, you know, we're going to have to back out because of the loan problem with the appraisal. And you can go ahead and make an offer on that second property. So the things to keep in mind are keep your options open, pursue it to whatever ends you're willing to go. But keep those options open so that if something else does come along, you're not just completely ignorant of it. Don't just stop shopping because you're working with this particular appraisal problem. All right. I think that just about covers it, folks. I do appreciate you taking the time to listen to what I have to say on these subjects. I'd love it if y'all would share your stories with me. I did get an email message from a listener last week, and I, you know, I apologize for I emailed you back, but I haven't called you yet. You did provide your phone number, and I'd love to get a little bit more insight. You shared a very kind story about how some things you learned from this show helped you out, but I'd love to hear about your experience. So I will be giving you a call, assuming you're listening, so that we could catch up and we can discuss your experience. So hopefully we can even share that with other listeners. Again, thanks for listening, folks. Head over to the website, www.therebelbroker.com. You can contact me there. You can also catch sort of the new way the show is going to be presented moving forward. I'm still tinkering with it on how to get it working exactly the way I want, but eventually that's going to be the main home of the show. So feel free to go over there and check it out. Until tomorrow, have a good one. Bye.